Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:15 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 6th and natural gas in the UK today had an initial surge and I think that panicked everyone. So finally the European Union said, well, golly, maybe these carbon prices are a bit too high. And they started to talk about maybe reducing them. So that pulled back sharply. It's back testing the sequence of higher reaction lows. But we're probably due at least some consolidation. And I think it just politically, it's going to be more expedient to allow a reversion back towards the mean. Doesn't mean that they're going to renege on their long-term objective of getting the price up to 100 euro, but it doesn't mean it has to go up there in a straight line. And I think that considering the speed with which the price has gone up over the course of the last 18 months, it's perhaps to be expected that we might have some choppiness, particularly following the both economic and political backlash that is developing as a result of the extreme shortages of various commodities in the energy sector right now. So we've had a sharp pullback in the UK natural gas price, which reflects the European gas price, and then also the carbon price. And that probably represents a medium-term peak. And it did translate into some weakness in oil prices. So Brent crude came back to test the $80 level. Now, as I was saying yesterday, as long as it's sustaining the move above $80, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, but that is a downside key reversal. It's not an especially large one, so the key to the key is follow through, and it will have to follow through on the downside, and that could quite easily take out a stop around the $80 level. So part of the reason why we've had the pop higher in oil prices and natural gas prices has been because of supply disruptions, but not only because of supply disruptions in natural gas, or at least an inability to refill the reserves, but also because of less wind. So one of the clear trends over the course of the last decade has been that the shale revolution in the USA has really been a game changer, and not just for the wider energy sector, but also for geopolitics, because we've also had this extraordinary move in natural gas going from 2 to 6 in the space of 18 months. But it got all the way up to that $6 level, and that was an area of previous resistance, and that's an awfully big downside key reversal in here today. So it's also suggesting that a peak of at least near-term, potentially medium-term significance is now in effect. And this is also, I think, reflecting the fact that even though we've had this extraordinary move higher, it's nothing compared with the kinds of moves that we had prior to the shale revolution. After the big hurricanes like Hurricane Rita and Katrina, we had extraordinary moves in US natural gas prices, going up to $14 at one stage in 2005. Now, since then, we haven't really seen prices above $6. And this is going to encourage a great deal of additional supply into the market. And certainly, there's going to be more drilling as a result of this. So this change of the USA from being the largest energy importer to being one of the biggest exporters has changed the geopolitical calculus. Places like Europe and China never really had to compete on an energy basis in the past because it was a level playing field. All of the major economies were major energy importers, and they relied on places like the Middle East and Russia and Venezuela and OPEC generally as major exporters of energy into all of those regions. but that's no longer the case. So it has greatly bolstered the argument for Europe and China to become energy independent. And carbon pricing is certainly a part of that for Europe. And then also they're using that as a trade weapon and becoming more protectionist as well. But it's all in service to the objective of becoming energy independent. And of course, they're asking Russia to sign up to that, because historically they would have signed up for long-term contracts, and Europe doesn't want to do that. So Russia has then decided to turn the screws on Europe, and they've been slow to greatly increase their supply. There's no question that they're going to do everything possible to ensure enough of gas flows to China, but China has signed long-term contracts and guaranteed pricing, and that gives them favored nation status, which is reasonable. But one thing that I find rather interesting right now is the commonality that we see between the Russian ruble and sorry, I will put this up the other way around, because it has very clear base formation characteristics. And we can see that the price came all the way back down and tested the lows from 2016 during the pandemic panic. And since then, it's had a sequence of higher reaction lows. And then we can think about the Canadian dollar in much the same way. That, and in fact, it's a lot closer to the upper side of its base formation. So this the concentration of interest in major commodity exporters is rather interesting, because the USA is now also a major commodity exporter, and that is something that is helping to support the dollar overall. So when we look at the dollar index, it might not be strengthening against the ruble or the Canadian dollar, or indeed the Australian dollar is also still quite steady, but it's firm against the euro. And the dollar was off its peak in here today, but at least it's still holding this advance. The big question, of course, from the perspective of the dollar is about the deficit. So obviously one of the primary attractions of commodity-related currencies is that in a bull market, then they enjoy really quite considerable current account surpluses. And there's not a lot of prospect for that in the USA right now. So there is this massive demand for funds, and there's the clear potential that significant additional spending is going to be permissioned. It might require a great deal of horse trading, and there is certainly the potential that they're going to bump up against the uncertainty of a technical default, but I don't think anyone's in any doubt that the USA would renege on its obligations. So it's really just political theater. The 10-year yield was steadier in here today, and the S&P 500 was well off its lows. So we're also seeing that there's potential here that when people start to think about what's really important, well, perhaps Merck's pill for COVID is really important. And then we can also think about whether it's easy to make money out of biotech companies. The Moderna share price is down from 500 to 300 in the space of 2 months. It doesn't mean that there's less efficacy for their solution. And we continue to see that Pfizer, having had its vaccine approved for increasingly young cohorts, it's also pulling back sharply. So there really is a winner-take-all attitude being propagated right the way through the biotech sector. There's still considerable potential for technological innovation in the sector. And it's almost every day that we see news about some new therapy. And we're on the cusp, for example, of the GlaxoSmithKline's a malaria vaccine being permissioned. And that has the potential to have a transformative effect on the African economy. And we've often heard statistics about just how much of a tax on productive capacity a $10 rise in the oil price is. But how much does malaria cost the GDP of equatorial countries around the world? And the potential that a vaccine could have a transformative effect is certainly something that I think we need to at least pay some attention to. Now, of course, African countries tend to have they behave like microcaps. But they do tend to do well in a commodity bull market. And the VanEck Africa Index is now right in the region of the trend mean, having rebounded reasonably impressively from the lows in March of last year. So we're at an interesting juncture. We did have some, I think, unease in India about the continued advances in energy prices. But with energy now starting to come back down, then that's removing at least part of that worry from the Indian market. We do have a short-term overbought condition, and there's been a bit of a loss of momentum over the last couple of weeks. But we're also in a new credit cycle for India, and that's generally positive overall. The Chinese market, the mainland market at least, is closed for this week. Won't open until next week because of the the Mid-Autumn Festival holiday. The Hang Seng was in negative territory today, but it really hasn't gone anywhere for nearly 2 weeks. And we've seen that Evergrande has gone bust and Fantasia went bust yesterday. And there's the potential that there could be a couple of more will run into significant difficulties. But it's quite likely also that following the Mid-Autumn Festival holiday that we're going to see liquidity infusions. And we're going to see additional spending in order to ring fence some of these growing risks in the high yield or offshore market. So there is certainly the scope for additional potential spending in here. We've also definitely seen that it's not just energy prices, but palm oil, for example, is pushing on the upside in a dynamic manner. And these are new all-time highs. Now, that may also pause somewhat tomorrow, given the weakness we've had in natural gas, for example, in European trading, and then following through into US trading. But this continues to be a bull market overall. When we then think about the other markets that are of particular interest right now, well, Bitcoin is standing out. It was up $3,700 in here today, and it has taken out the peak from early September. So it was looking likely with the succession of downward dynamics in September, then that this was a lower high. Well, now that has we've definitely seen support come through around the 40,000 level, and then we had the big upward dynamic on the 1st of October, and now we have a break above that high. So this is looking increasingly like a recovery, and it's looking increasingly likely that the price will push up and test that peak from April around the 60,000 level. I think it's particularly notable that Bitcoin is leading on this occasion, and Ethereum might be doing better, but it is still significantly below the peak from September, so it has some catch up to do. Now, there are a couple of innovations that are relevant for Bitcoin. It now has the Lightning Network, and that's been the case for a while. But there's the potential, at least, that we're pricing in the potential for smart contracts to be released in less than a month, or at least in November. So that's allowing Bitcoin to compete with smaller tokens. So in order to sustain the market cap in excess of $1 trillion, you need to have money flowing into the market. So that can come from two different places. It can come because new money is being printed, or it can be parasitic on other assets. Well, right now it's looking increasingly likely that Bitcoin is being parasitic on much of the rest of the cryptocurrency universe, because it's the largest of the coins. We've been through a significant corrective phase, and then because of these additional innovations in the blockchain and in networks that can overlay it, that will allow Bitcoin to compete with some of the more promising altcoins. And then there's the prospect of regulation. And regulation represents an existential threat to some of the more speculative ventures. So then that would also encourage investors to seek a haven in terms of the largest of the cryptocurrencies. Now, the other, I think, interesting point here is that Bitcoin's behaving as it is, less because of safe haven and more because of speculative interest. Gold prices were off their lows in here today, continuing to hold the $1,750 level. We continue to see that the low around 1725 is holding. So we had a low around the 1675 level. We've had a low around 1700. The low around 1725. So the lows are all $25 above each other. And that would suggest that the next low, it would be around 1750, which is what is happening right now. But if we can pop up out of this level, well, then it will have broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So we're still in an environment where we have inflationary pressures rising. Now we're starting to see that there's the potential for greater reopening, and that with more vaccinations, more treatments, more different vaccines, that anyone who wants to be protected will be protected. The protections that will be available will probably be more attractive. And increasingly, countries are coming around to the idea that what we're dealing with is something that is worse than a flu, but not sufficiently worse than a flu to really justify closing down the entire global economy. So that's certainly something that is beneficial for corporate earnings. And when we think about those corporate earnings, and I'm trying to remember go with the corporate profits, we can see that those surged higher in 2020, and they hadn't really gone anywhere from 2012 until about 2018. So we've had a significant pop on the upside. Now it's updated with a quarterly lag, and it does tend to be also done retrospectively. So you tend to get changes in how the chart looks every time it's updated. It'll be next updated at the end of the year, for the end of September. But as long as corporate profits are going up in a linear fashion like this, then there's the scope for the stock market to remain reasonably well supported. And if we do look at more reopening, then that's beneficial for stock markets. And it would support the argument that we're likely to see an additional pop on the upside for stocks. And certainly that's relevant as we see an increasing number of indices right back in the region of their trend means. So if dip buying is going to occur, well, this is a handy area for that to begin. On the other hand, if inflationary pressures prevail, and we're definitely seeing more labor movements and demands for higher wages, And certainly, I think a large number of workers have got a justifiable beef with just society in general, because they're the ones who turned up for work during the pandemic and continued to do their jobs. And there were lots of people who became unemployed and did better off from doing nothing than they did from working originally. So all those people who were still working, then they feel like they got the short end of the stick. And then now they're being asked to continue to work, and the companies that they work for are having these extraordinary profit gains, so they want to get a bigger piece of it. And that was pretty much inevitable, considering the events that have happened over the course of the last 2 years. So we're likely to continue to see inflationary pressures prevailing, and bond yields are holding steady because there is at least some potential that the debt ceiling will be resolved and that there will be some additional spending, but perhaps not as much as had initially been anticipated. But as long as those inflationary pressures continue to rise, it suggests at least that the kinds of companies with strong balance sheets, those that have pricing power, will continue to prevail. And it's particularly relevant to look at the relative performance of the largest companies, because they haven't been performing for more than a year. Now, it had a significant rebound on a relative basis over the last few days, and it's been ranging relative to the wider market since July. But we are considerably below the pattern of outperformance from June of last year, and this has been a significant loss of momentum. Now, it was losing momentum in 2019 as well, but then we had the significant advance in 2020 because of the stay-at-home mandates. So now we're right in the region of the trend mean, and it certainly would be benign if this performance of these companies can hold this area. As long as they do hold this area, I think we can remain reasonably benign with the outlook for the wider market and give the benefit of the doubt to the dip buying strategy. If, however, bond yields start to pick up momentum on the downside, or bonds pick up momentum on the downside and yields break on the upside, well, then all bets are off. So we're in a very interest rate sensitive environment. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.